I think life happens in phases. Some phases require more of your attention than the other. I believe that it's hard to say truly to have a balance until you get to a place of comfort or a place of, you know, true stability. So as a provider, don't beat yourself up if you miss certain things or not present during certain times, as long as what you're doing benefits the totality of your family. I would say the easiest way to get into real estate, to learn from the ground up, is probably a broker. Learn the ins and outs of real estate, the emotional side, the numbers side, why people buy this, why this is a good deal. If there's a good deal, money will come to it. Good deals never chase money. Money chases good deals because money is just a tool.
If there are beginners in real estate, what would be the first step that they should take? All right, we have another podcast right here in Dubai Catch, and I have a very special guest with me. Max Maxwell, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I guess I'll introduce myself.
Yep. you know the word.
Yeah. So my name is Max Maxwell. I am Jamaican-American, born in America to Jamaican parents. And I currently live in Dubai. I'm an entrepreneur. Most people know me from my real estate ventures. I'm a real estate developer in Africa, mainly in Tanzania. And I live in Dubai and, you know, beautiful wife, beautiful family, and I'm enjoying myself.
Well, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
You've mentioned part of your story that you started with $300 in your pocket.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that story?
You know, it's crazy because everybody, I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs have this story. For me, you know, I went through several different businesses. Well, I'll back up a little bit. You know, at 17, I went to the military.
Oh, wow. You're even in the U.S.
Yeah, I did that for 4 years. And I came out because it just wasn't, it didn't, you know, I learned some disciplines, right? I think that was the most important thing I picked up there was disciplines. And I think in me, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was doing small stuff in high school to make money extra and things like that. And then I got out of the military and I just started trying things. I tried 12 different things over those years. And I got to a point where I was, you know, emotionally exhausted, physically exhausted. And at the point of 30 years old, so from 17 to 30, I left home at 17, didn't really come back to 30 to live. And I moved with my mom and I had nothing. Like my last venture just took everything out of me.
What was that?
It was software. It was an app. And I just couldn't complete it. I did everything I tried to do to try to muster it up myself and complete it. And I just couldn't do it. I think the idea was great. I still think the idea is great. But I moved on and I had nothing. And I had to go back to my mom's house and I had to kind of figure out what's next. And it's a humbling experience because I just turned 40. So 10 years ago is when I had to move back home, figure life out, and I had nothing. I had an old Volkswagen Jetta that barely worked. It got me to A to B though. And I got back into real estate because one of the first things I did when I got out of the military was became a real estate broker. But this time when I got into real estate, I got it from the investment side, but I didn't have no money. And so I learned about a niche in real estate called wholesaling. I studied it, 3 weeks of it. I studied and went out there and started taking action. And I had no money. I used my last dollars to fill up my gas tank to be able to kind of drive around and look at properties and do things like that to invest with. And I'm here now. So
how are you so certain that after you spend your last dollar, you're like, on this, I'm going to bet on doing the wholesaling part?
Man, when you're at the bottom, certainty is not something that you use to move forward, because when you're at the bottom, there is no certainty.
It's like you're either way going down the drain. So might as well just do whatever you
do. I'm going to stay where I'm at, or it's going to get worse, or I'm going to try something and it may get better. And I think that's where I was in life. And alhamdulillah, I got better. It got better and I learned, I grew and the business grew. And it led me into different phases of real estate and to now where I develop real estate.
Now you're a real estate developer.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you should be proud of. I mean, not everyone who's maybe a real estate broker can become a developer.
Yeah.
It's a very hard journey, I would say.
It's very tough, but as long as you learn along the way, I think you pick up the skills you need. Investing, real estate is real estate. It just depends on what side you want to be on.
We'll talk more about that. Mm-hmm. But first, you mentioned that you're American Jamaican.
Yeah.
How has the Jamaican part of it influenced your life and your business?
A lot. And I would say from the Jamaican part really influenced me as a child because my parents were hustlers. Like they did whatever they had to do to make us feel comfortable as kids. It's five siblings, so me and four brothers and sisters. And so even though we weren't rich by any means, probably middle class, lower middle class, we never felt like we didn't have anything. And that was because of the hard work of my parents, whether my mom was working two jobs or my dad was. It didn't matter. It felt good. So that hustle and then the nature of Jamaicans, I think there's a joke that people say Jamaicans have eight jobs. You know, they always have so many jobs, right? And I think in me that hustle was instilled in me very early. And that's where it took me to where now. I never give up. I just keep going. And, you know, eventually it pays off. So that side of it is amazing. The food side of it, I love the Jamaican culture.
I still haven't tried the Jamaican food. I really need to try one.
It's crazy because Jamaican food, obviously, like most places, is best enjoyed in Jamaica.
Mm.
But there's some very good, decent restaurants even in Dubai.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you name one?
There's a new one I just tried, and I just ate it twice. I had three times we ordered it. It's called Jam Fusion. It's
Jam.
Silicon Bay, I believe it is. And, that's good. There's Miss Lily's. That's good. I think that's downtown. So there's some good Jamaican foods here, but nothing beats when my mom flies here and she starts cooking for us when she's here in Dubai.
The best food is the mom's food, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, when we talked about the family specifically here, you mentioned that your mother and father were hustling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's really important for children to see that the parents are working hard, especially you as a father now?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even now, my son's 11 months old, and even now, he sits on my lap in my home office, and he sees me work. He may not understand it now, but eventually he will see, because you can't think that these things that they have or we possess, or the life that we have as kids or our future kids and my kids now will have is comes from nothing. It's work. So yeah, I do believe that if you're a parent, it's important to show your kids how you make your money, how you earn a living, so that they understand that it's actually comes from something. It doesn't just drop out of the sky.
They see it as a way like, okay, my dad is hustling. He's working really hard.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I should do when I grow up.
Or at least appreciate where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's fair to push every kid into maybe entrepreneurship, but even any hustle, any job, any whatever you're doing, you need to let your kids know where it comes from.
It's true that not everyone is suited to be an entrepreneur.
Correct.
But they can still excel in something that they might have passion for.
Correct. Correct.
Now, how would you balance your role between a father, a husband, an entrepreneur? How do you do that?
You know, it's tough. And I think life happens in phases. And some phases require more of your attention than others. So I believe that it's hard to say truly to have a balance until you get to a place of comfort. Or a place of, you know, true stability. And, you know, I believe I'm there now, but I still like to hustle. So it's important to balance, but to understand there's no true balance. So as a provider, don't beat yourself up if you miss certain things or not present during certain times. As long as what you're doing benefits the totality of your family, you know, down the road or coming soon. Because I think that what the family dynamic is made up where people have roles to help while other people, like the dad could be working and the mom could be helping. The mom could be working, the dad could be helping. It doesn't matter. There's a balance within the family that is important. But as an entrepreneur or as the main breadwinner, it's okay to understand that balance is not always going to be there.
You mentioned now something about the breadwinner.
Yeah.
It's a very common role that usually guys or men have that role.
Yeah.
But we live in a situation where the modern society is now split between the two.
Yeah.
Do you think this is okay as normal as it should be that two people should be breadwinners or one should be the one ultimate breadwinner?
I think that you do whatever you need to do to win.
Hmm.
And if that means that both spouses are working, then you do so.
But what about the kids, for example, in that case, when they have kids?
That comes to that balance part, right? Mm. Me religiously and me personally, I believe that the man should be the breadwinner.
I see.
And he needs to do whatever he can do to provide for the family. But there is a reason why you have a partner in life.
Yes.
Right? And so the partner should be able to contribute when necessary, but know that the responsibility lies on you as a man. That's my belief.
I feel that each person has a role within the family.
Correct.
They both have important roles to support the family and ensure that it continues to grow and, you know, not, how do you say it? It's more, not persevere, but more of a...
I would say, yeah, I mean, all the high tide rise all boats. I mean,
yes,
because of the roles in a family, it's important to understand that the breadwinner doesn't mean you do more than the person taking care of the kids.
They have different ways of contribution.
Yeah, equally as valuable, yes. Sometimes even more, you know, because somebody raising your kids is very important.
It's very hard.
And it's very hard.
Very challenging.
I'd much rather be working than hustling
indeed.
And having to deal with the kids. But seriously, well, I would rather be out dealing and hustling to provide the financial stability for the home.
So when you started this entrepreneurship journey, mm-hmm. were you an entrepreneur before you even had a family? Or
yes,
was this something that you searched?
Yeah, I was an entrepreneur for a while. I mean, I had many different businesses. I haven't worked a corporate job in a long time, a 9-to-5 in many, many years. Probably 15 plus years. And that just, I always had it in me that I can go out and find ways to make money without doing this. For me personally, a 9-to-5 or corporate job didn't fit me.
Mm.
And I don't say everybody needs to feel that way, but for me, it didn't, the pattern of waking up every day and doing something that you may not enjoy, or even if you do enjoy, but never seeing the progress in your personal life, is something that didn't fit me. And that's not describing every 9-to-5 job or every corporate job, but it just, for me, it was, I had visions that I wanted to be able to see come out. And I think that's the important part of an entrepreneur, is to be able to see a vision and make that vision come through by employing people or whatever that is.
You know, I had a discussion with my father, because I am both in a way. I work this 9-to-5 job, and at the same time, I'm a slash entrepreneur in my own mm-hmm. media world. And there was this conflicting thing that we always discuss about, when is the right time to quit your job and just fully focus on whatever you're doing?
Yeah.
And it's very hard, because most people say, don't quit your job, let it be a sustainable income and continue working in business until you reach to a certain unbelievable level, and then you can quit your job. While other people say, no, utilize your potential right now
mm-hmm.
and quit your job. Focus on this moment and let it grow.
I never try to give one answer to everyone, because it really depends on what your goals are.
Hmm.
I would say in this day and time, the way that you have to pay bills and maintain a lifestyle, if you're independent on your own, it's important to keep both until one replaces the other, right? And so during these times, it's important to live below your means. And then once you are comfortable living below your means, then you're going to spend less of your 9-to-5 money and potentially be able to put some of that money, more money, into your personal venture. And then when that personal venture gets to a point where you can then support yourself without that 9-to-5, then make that jump. Me personally, I'm a guy that likes to build a plane while it's going down. I don't care to hang on one branch while I jump to the other. And that's just my style.
It's like you're saying, you don't mind if the ship is there waiting for you or not. You burn the ship and just survive the island no matter what happens.
For me, that's how because I believe so much in what I'm doing, and I'm also okay with having nothing.
Mm.
I'm okay with having nothing.
You've been there.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know what it feels like. And it's not that bad.
So when it comes to outside of work, what is like your fastest way to recharge, to enjoy time here in Dubai?
For me, outside of doing any, you know, honestly, I'm a homebody, really. But I like to, you know, eat at good restaurants. And doesn't mean it's fancy, just good food. And I really, what I used to do every Sunday when I was in America is I used to just get in the car and just drive around, just look at things, see real estate, see the way people move, interact. And during that time, I'm listening to podcasts, or just enjoying myself, literally just taking a car ride, and then sleep. Sleep is very important. I love to sleep. I go to bed every night by 10 p.m. and I'm up
10 p.m.
Yeah, every night.
Wow.
I don't like to wake up. I don't like to stay up late because for me, with all the ventures that I have going on, I make so many decisions during the day that my brain is almost toasted by 8, 9 o'clock. So I have to spend time with my son by a certain time. He goes to bed by a certain time. Then I have an hour to maybe set up the next day. And then it's an hour hanging out with my wife or doing whatever. And then I'm usually going to bed.
And does this type of quality time that you're spending with them, mm-hmm. is it enough for them to feel, okay, he's there with us at the same time with the business?
So that's not the standard where I say, okay, there goes the hour, there goes your hour. But there's things that I won't miss. Like when my son's eating his last meal, I want to be there. When before he goes to bed, I want to say goodnight. And me and my wife hang out throughout the entire day. And then there's times where we just may sit down and watch a TV show or just sit down and talk on the couch.
Interesting.
And then we're like,
even during your business hours that you're working, or
yeah, you know,
she's there with you.
Yeah, she's always around. Mm-hmm. But no, she does. I do separate myself and do things because where I am now, I block myself for about 2 or 3 hours a day of just steady work. All those decisions, all my meetings have to happen in that time. If not, then, you know, I'll push it to the next day or somebody else, because I don't want to, where I am now, I don't want to spend all day to that business or to these businesses.
So you don't get worried, you're like, you're all day spending texting, because this is what happens usually in business. You're constantly trying to follow up with people. You're trying to follow up with different stakeholders through texting, you know, oh, I'm just waiting for the text, or then another person contacts me, another person, you know, they're texting at different times throughout the day.
I let it go. Because some of my great mentors, people that I look up to when I was growing up, sometimes they walk into the house, they put that phone to the side. You can't catch them when they get off. And I used to be like that. As a young entrepreneur, I was always attentive to the customers, to my employees and all those things. And what I realize is when you're forced to step away and nothing burns down, you start to realize these problems are not really problems. They can wait till tomorrow or wait till the next day or deal with another person that could deal with it. It's just the way I like to do. I don't like to feel, oh, I got to go do something. Now, there's times when you're growing a new business where, yeah, you got to be attentive to it for sure.
And how long should you be attentive for this new business?
Till it works.
So it could be 2 years, 3 years, 4 years.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Right, because if you look at 2 or 3 years in the grand scheme of life, such a short period of time, and when you look at something, you say, okay, if I can dedicate 2 or 3 years of my life to this thing, and it makes me financially successful, no matter where you're sitting at on the side of success, whether you have no money or you have it all, you would say, of course I would do that.
But this is where it comes to certainty. That your business will succeed.
Not everyone's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And certainty doesn't come with investment. Certainty doesn't come with entrepreneurship. But there's this thing that people say that not all risk takers are successful, but all risk takers, all people that took all entrepreneurs are risk takers. But not everybody. But if you don't take the risk, you get nothing. Right. And so you have to take.
That's the word of taking risks.
You have to.
Yes.
You have to, because if you get nothing.
So what lessons would you say your journey resonate with Dubai mostly? What have you learned by being here in Dubai?
The vision. Being able to look outwards and be ahead of where you are now. I think vision is very important for an entrepreneur or even anybody in their regular life, because it's important to set a goal, even though it may seem like a fairy tale, but to set the goal and to incrementally work at that every single day. It doesn't require big, massive changes. It just requires small changes consistently over time, and you'll get there. You can't look at Dubai itself and not think of, how is this possible? Like soon
we're celebrating 53 years.
Exactly. Soon we're celebrating 53 years of its inception. And you look at the timeline, you're like, wait, I'm 40. So this thing it's only 13 years older than myself. So you have to think that through leadership and through vision, and small changes over time, anything is possible. And when you're here, you feel that because you live in it.
And every year that you come here, you see something here.
Especially if you live outside and then you come, you're like, wait, what? Where did this come from? And the changes, the swift changes. A lot of businesses and a lot of countries or a lot of cities, hard to make changes because they can't pivot fast enough. I believe Dubai has a strong, I don't know what they use, but they got a strong pivot machine. They're able to recognize the problem, and as established as Dubai is, they're able to change it by the weekend.
It's the vision by the leaders.
Yes.
From Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who's the Dubai ruler.
Yeah.
To Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, who's the president of the United Arab Emirates. They shape the way and pave the way for the next generation.
You can't. I try to explain to my friends back home in America, and it kind of sounds like a fairy tale that I'm talking about, or it can't be real, or be like, oh, you just love Dubai too much. You guys know me. I'm serious. There was a problem last month, and now it's not here. You know, like whatever it is,
that fast. Yeah.
And most of the time, it goes through so much bureaucracy to get to the point, but no, it just happens. They recognize it, they attack it, it's done.
And there's now a zero bureaucracy initiative. Have you heard about that as well?
Of course, you look at it and it was like, okay, why is everybody not doing this? Why isn't it? And I here's the main thing for me. When the government runs efficiently and realize that it's upon itself to actually produce income itself, so that it doesn't rely on its citizens and its residents to feed them, then they become efficient, because efficient is the same thing you would want in your own business. So when you run it like a business, or you run it with the mind that efficiency means better for the people inside, then you do it.
You flourish.
Exactly. It doesn't become controversial.
For sure. Now, you being a real estate developer,
yeah,
how would you compare Dubai's real estate to other countries that you've been?
Here's the sole difference between real estate in any other place in the world. Everybody in the chain of command is in the same accord. They're saying the same thing. Dubai real estate is not attractive unless the place is attractive. Meaning that the ruler has to make a decision that when it's good up here, it's good for everybody down here. Meaning that, as for example, as a developer in Zanzibar, you have to do promotions for tourism because you have to attract people that this is a nice tourism place. You have to do you have to advertise the country in a way that, look at this, it's nice, it's efficient,
it's safe,
all of these things. When you're in America and you're in these other places, a developer doesn't rely on the government to also be in accord that this is, basically, it's hard to describe, but everybody's singing the same song. And that song helps all the businesses that are here, because the attraction coming to Dubai is an initiative. It's on purpose. And when everybody's
aligned,
it just makes things
easier. Yes. Yes, for sure. Now, also, I wanted to ask, in terms of entrepreneurs that are moving to a place like Dubai, it's very fast paced if you think about it. So how can you suggest to them or advise them in terms of living here in a fast paced world?
I believe entrepreneurship in itself, successful entrepreneurs will tell you that entrepreneurship is fast paced in itself, because it's the one who can pivot and adjust to whatever the surroundings are is the one who wins. That's for any size company. The longer it takes you to pivot, the less likely you are to succeed, or the less likely you are to have a business that goes over decades or long term. Anybody can do something quick and make some money, but do you have a 5, 10, 20 year old business that has pivot with the times, with what's ever going on? To me, not only Dubai, the UAE, the GCC is such an untapped market that
with much potential.
It's not potential is something that's far out. It's now. Like it's, and for me as an entrepreneur, I don't mind that everybody doesn't know because
it's an opportunity for you.
It's an opportunity for myself, but it's like, do you realize the technology, the buying power, the logistics, the location, all of these things? If you just had a business that just serviced just the GCC, you can be just as successful as any other, if you opened up in America or anywhere in the West. But it's one of those things that if you don't come and see it, you'll never experience it and you won't believe that it's true.
It's a very interesting thing that you said. I don't see many Americans coming to Dubai. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, America in itself is so big. It's continent. Like
I look it up myself because as an entrepreneur, I have to see who lives here.
Mm.
To see who I'm advertising to, who I'm selling to, what is the demographics. And you look at any chart and America's not even on it. Why that is, I think because, one, a lot of Americans don't travel. First of all, America is a big place.
It's a very big place.
It's a very big
place. I mean, you can see everything there if you want to.
Yeah, but it's important to also understand that the world is outside of America as well.
True.
And I think the statistic is only less than 40% of Americans have a passport. So the idea of traveling abroad is not even within them. And I think there's definitely way more Europeans here only because maybe proximity. But I think even the culture in Europe is essentially a smaller place. But you can travel in different states and countries within Europe just by driving.
Yes.
You can drive for 36 hours and still be in America. Right?
True. So
it's very big.
Very true.
I've done it before. That's how I know. I went from North Carolina to LA, 36 hours. You can get in a plane and fly for 6 hours and still be in America.
In America, yes.
So there is this understanding that way. America's big, it's huge, but I think it's important, just as people, as humans, to travel and experience other cultures.
And get to learn.
Yeah, because that's the number one, I think, teacher myself is travel.
You get to observe things that you usually not observe. And when you observe those things, you're either thankful, you're blessed.
Correct.
Or you learn something new that you haven't learned about before. New cultures, new perspectives, new things in life that you didn't know about maybe in your own country.
I think the most important thing is when you get to travel, you get to develop your own perspective on all things. Because if you read or watch something, that perspective is given to you by someone else. If you experience it yourself, then you get to write your own experience about it.
Very true. So, When it comes to a quote, there was a quote that you shared with me, and it said, a good deal never searches for money. Money always searches for a good deal.
Yeah.
How does this quote shape your investment philosophy?
Because what happens is, and this is, I learned this from myself over, you know, either bad business ideas or bad businesses, period, is that when you have something good, you'll never have to go look for money in the sense that, oh, I'm having a hard time raising money or I can't do this. Anytime something good happens, it's funded. Do things slip under the rug sometimes? Absolutely. But it might've been the wrong person presenting it or wrong person leading the charge. I'll give you an example. In real estate, if you find a good deal, whether it's for $100,000 or $100 million, say for example, we're in a nice building, right? If I could get this building for $8 million and the owner says, hey, I want to sell it to you for $8 million. I guarantee you within 1 hour, I can have all $8 million ready to buy it because it's valued at, let's say, $100 million, right? So if there's a good deal, money will come to it. Good deals never chase money. Money chases good deals because money is just a tool.
How do you know a good deal? That's this thing.
That takes you to study and learn something. And in real estate, that's what I had to do for many years to understand how to identify a good deal. And that skill alone has, I think that's the most important skill. How do you look at something and say, there's a big opportunity here, or this is a good deal? And when you figure that out, in any industry you're in, then you're going to say, okay, I've figured out because now I can connect the money with this good deal and I can make money.
this is when it comes to scouting for good deals. But what if you're the one who's creating a good deal? How do you create a good deal?
Yeah, you have to create a win-win situation for the money side and the deal side.
Because it can be very biased. You know what I mean? In terms of you as the one who's selling this deal, you might say, yeah, this is all the benefits of this. But the other person might not see the same benefits that you see.
Wrong buyer. You can't get a tech guy to invest in the real estate, nor can you get a real estate guy to invest in the tech. The understanding is completely different. The principle and philosophy of those type of investments are completely different. And so if you bring a guy that's invested $100 million in tech and you tell him about this building for $8 million, he might buy it, but the reality is he doesn't understand the investment. And so you make sure that whoever you're selling to is the right person that you need to be pitching to or selling to or raising money from.
So was Tanzania there in Zanzibar, was it a good deal that you saw and you took the potential of it?
Yeah, I actually went on vacation and realized that the island reminded me so much of Jamaica. And anytime I'm traveling, like I said, I like to take Sundays and just drive around.
So this was just a normal vacation? You were going there?
Vacation with my wife. And I went there and I was driving around. I was like, man, this place reminds me of home. And from there, I started just whispering, hey, what is real estate like here? Started looking. Then I'm researching. Then I'm driving around. I have a driver there. I'm driving around this because I can't. I'm driving around and seeing stuff. And I'm like, man, that'd be amazing. I went back a month later. And this time I went back with intentions. 7 days. I want to find a piece of real estate that somebody's selling. And typically I don't buy anything for sale. That's another thing in my real estate thing. I don't buy things for sale in real estate. So this property was not for sale, but I heard that the owner was potentially having to sell it. A couple months later, I bought the property. And it originally started, the original conversation on the original vacation with my wife started as, man, we can build a beach house here. Then it turned into, okay, now we have this big piece of land. I can develop something nice here. This place is a secret. Nobody knows about Zanzibar. So maybe if I draw up a good idea, put the team together, I can execute this. And that's what happened.
And you were a real estate developer before that, right?
Not at this scale. Not 45. My next project is 120 units at one time. Not that big. Four or five units at a time.
But he still had the foundations of what it takes to be a real estate developer.
Correct.
Which is not something easy even to learn. How do you learn to be a real estate developer?
So here's a secret. Here's a secret. Real estate developers are only visionaries. Most real estate developers don't even build what they drew up on paper. So to be a visionary means that you got to be able to understand that this is a feasible project, a good deal, and then you have to assemble the team, the engineers, the architects, the construction, all of these things. And
so how did you know exactly what you needed in terms of a team in order to develop this?
Because of my experience in real estate before.
Okay.
I knew that in order to even draw something, you need an engineer. Well, my cousin's the engineer. Let me call him. I know you do this. Here goes this plot. I'm sending it to you. Give me something that you would do. 24 hours later. Wow, this looks good. Change this, do this, do this. Because it's my vision. This looks real good. Okay, let's do a BQ. Find out what it would cost me. Okay, I got that money. Let's go. Move from Jamaica to Zanzibar. Are you willing to do that? I'll give you part of the company. He says, I'm done.
So partnership
happened
there.
Partnership, and I brought in other local partners that were here to help me on the ground. And that team we put together has been able, we sold that, we reserved every single unit in less than 2 months.
You never thought of a perspective that most people would say, why Zanzibar? Why would you go there? Maybe you risk your money, you put something, and then somehow the risk of that money going forever. You know, you're not sure are the same rules that apply in the United States and Dubai would be applicable in that place.
Got to do your due diligence.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But 20 years ago, people would say the same thing about Dubai. Dubai, were you investing in Dubai in real estate? Look at those people now. They kicking themselves. And so what I like to do is I never like to buy anything for sale because it's overpriced. Me as a real estate investor. So my investment strategy is never look for anything that's for sale. Typically, I need to find it myself. And then I like to be in developing places, emerging markets, first movers. First movers have an advantage. And our concept in Zanzibar was one of the first. We weren't the first developer there, but our concept of a gated community with all the amenities was probably one of its first. Like I said, uncertainty is not a part of entrepreneurship. And so I knew that at the end of the day, fail safe, that if I spent the money to build all 45 villas, I know I could sell the whole community to venture capitalists or a fund.
What is it ready now in terms of?
We're about 55% done. We're two months ahead of schedule. We look to do delivery in April, I believe.
April of next year.
Yeah, this year.
Oh, wow. Very close. Yeah. That's very close. It's going to be exciting times.
Exciting times, yeah.
What was the biggest lesson you've learned from building this?
Even though you know as an entrepreneur, you never stop learning. And it's important as the leader of an organization to continue to sell your vision to your team members. That was a big thing. How do I transfer what's in my head to the people that who are now trusting me to lead them for the next 5 years and get them to buy into my vision and then operate as if they own it themselves? That's all over again, because in America, I went from having, you know, 20 something employees down to back to now I got only 3 or 4, still making good money. And now I'm at 120 something employees again.
Oh, wow.
So because I also built my own construction company simultaneously to be able to deliver what we promised.
So this construction company is in Zanzibar.
Yeah.
So let's go into some of the advice questions for the audience here. Mm-hmm. If they are beginners in real estate, what would be the first step that they should take?
Real estate is so broad. Mm-hmm. And so you have to find the lowest barrier of entry to that real estate, because you can't just skip these lessons in real estate. There's prerequisites to becoming an investor or a developer or whatever it is. And I would say the easiest way to get into real estate, to learn from the ground up, is probably a broker.
Hmm.
And learn the ins and outs of real estate, the emotional side, the numbers side, why people buy this, why this is a good deal, why this is not a good deal. Learn the area that you want to be an expert in, because that's important, right? I know in my head, I know where I'm from. I know the zip codes. I know what type of houses are supposed to be there. So you learn the area, learn real estate, get comfortable with the numbers. And in that time, you start to evaluate what's a good deal or bad deal, right? Because there's only one sector of real estate that buys off emotion. And that's when somebody's buying their personal home.
Yes.
Every other real estate transaction is all about numbers. Whether you're buying a second vacation home that can bring you income, or you're selling a 50-story higher sky rise.
You got to see the client. What is he looking for? Is he an investor, or is he someone who's looking for a home?
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Learning people, understanding what people want, learning how to communicate well. So I think because it doesn't cost that much to become a real estate broker, I think it's an easy way to get in the door and then find your sector, because there's a commercial broker, there's residential broker, there's investment side. There's leasing, there's sale, there's all these different sectors. And then whatever sector you eventually want to get to, you'll learn it.
For sure. Now, if you're going to talk about those people who are taking their first step in the real estate, what are the common mistakes that most people do in real estate?
They think it's easy. They don't study. Even as a broker, you need to understand, the more knowledgeable you are as a broker, the easier it is for you to find what your client want and get that deal closed. And I think people don't understand the market. I should be able to point out a part in Dubai to you or wherever you are and say, what are the prices in this area? What is it like living here? What is the newest development? All of these things. I think if you study it and really become engulfed into the actual business or the trade or whatever you're trying to learn, that is what you need to do. It's not just making Instagram videos, being pretty, dressing up nice, you really need to have the knowledge behind yourself.
Study your environment really well.
Have to.
Sure. I mean, you're giving a really good sound advice when it comes to this. And I feel that there's so many things people can learn in their own industries, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. If it's real estate, if it's finance, if it's stock market, you just have to be in the zone to study it hard.
Consume it all the time.
Know every aspect of it. Know what's moving that market. Know how it's working, how it's functioning, and what's bringing the, you know, the cash flow, what's getting it out of there. You have to understand it from A to Z. That's how they say. Now, what would be the key to building generational wealth in this world? I mean, with what you're doing right now, you're building something that will last for generations.
Yeah.
Will last good wealth for your family and for the generations to come. So what's the key?
For investment, if you're talking strictly investment side, there's two things that are important for generational wealth. One is the cash flow of the asset and the appreciation of the asset.
Mm.
The reason why that's important is because if you can't spin off cash flow, that means the money you're putting it doesn't give you a return, at least not anytime soon. And it's also important for that whatever you put your money into to appreciate over time, compound interest, compound like the compounding of the value has to go up. This is why Dubai does so well with off plan. The moment the building's finished, it's worth more than what you originally bought it for. And so that's important. So those two things are very important. And then if you want, as an entrepreneur, if you want to be able to hand down a business or have a business worth be go through generations, find out how to fire yourself from your business as quick as possible. Not like in the sense of what I'm really saying, but because in the beginning, when you do a business, you're going to have to do all the roles. Then you're going to have to start firing yourself from these roles and putting other
delegating.
People. Yeah, you have to delegate because it's important that if you want your business to be generational, it has to be able to run without you. And if you want to go on vacation or if you get sick, the business should be able to do just as good or even better without you there. So that's my key to probably generational.
So how do you go about to finding the right people to hire and being able to put them in the places that you're delegating?
Yeah. For me, I learned, and this is one of the lessons I learned in business. One, as an entrepreneur, you need to be real good at identifying talent. Be careful with untapped talent because you have to nurture that. But the reality is talent's not sitting at home. They're already doing something for someone else or themselves. So it's important that you have a good vision and you can convey that vision because people that want to work in a company want to believe in the leader. And if you're not a convincing leader, then you're not going to attract top talent. And it's that simple. So you need to be able to convince them and show results because people go work to secure their own future. Remember, not everybody's an entrepreneur. So some people enjoy working in a team and in a company and seeing that flourish, including the company and themselves. And so if you're able to convey that vision to good people, then I think you have no problem building a team.
What's the best advice you have ever received? And how did that shape you?
Man, the best advice. That's a good question. I would say the best advice I ever receive is probably get started. Because so many people live life and end their life with so many regrets. They never did this thing they wanted to do. They never started this idea. I'm not saying it would have been a success, but you check that box. And so whatever it is you want to do, stop putting excuses in front of that and just do it. And I would say the second, I give you two, is nobody's coming to save you.
I think that's the advice you would give to your younger self?
Yeah, 100%. Nobody's coming to save you. And that's for a good reason. When you realize that you're in control of what happens to you here on earth, then you know that you would put those excuses aside and just do what you need to do to win.
Sound advice.
Yeah.
So how can people connect with you more if they were looking to learn more about Jaquani's?
Yeah, Jaquani Shores, our new development.
Yeah.
We just launched that. We were in Oman a few weeks ago, had an amazing turnout. I think we reserved like 20% of the project just there.
Oh, wow. So the people bought the off plan from Omani people?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nice. And so, because one thing about what we build is these assets that never go down. These are all beachfront assets. You know, you can't name a beachfront asset that's probably lost value. And so, yeah, check out Chukwani. My company in Tanzania is Padco, P-A-D-D-C-O. But just follow me online. Just put my name in, Max Maxwell. I'm everywhere.
Every social media platform.
Max Maxwell.
Now, for your project, is there a specific social media for it as well?
Padco, P-A-D-D-C-O.
Okay.
Yeah, and that means Pan-African Development Company.
I guess that's all for today. Thank you so much for being here. I'm sure they learned a lot.
Amazing conversation, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much.